Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Malcolm Nance is here with us today. He's one of the world's leading experts in the strategy and tactics of the Al-Qaeda organization, international terrorism, global security, policy, and torture. He has nearly three decades of field experience in anti-terrorism and counterterrorism intelligence and combat operations in the Balkans, Middle East, and sub-Saharan Africa. He's here to give us some perspective on what we're reading in the headlines and seeing in the news. And we want you to be part of the discussion as well. What do you think? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Two people on the phone already, Malcolm. But before we go, let me ask you, I'm going to name two words and I want you to react, okay? Here we go. These are major words, conceptual words. Dick Cheney.
Well, Dick Cheney. The very fact that we have Dick Cheney on television today, elected vice president, actually bragging that he endorses and recommends what would be a war crime anywhere else is just absolutely stunning. I'm being very reserved about that. I was on CNN Sunday and I got pretty heated about it. The honor of the United States is always at stake when we go into combat. But to actually have an administration choose that they will side with the Nazis, because this is a technique the Nazis use, or that they will side with the Imperial Japanese of World War II in using their techniques, or Pol Pot. I mean, I went to the S-21 prison in Cambodia soon after it opened up, and the waterboard they use is the waterboard we use in the United States. So
what exactly is a waterboard? I've always imagined sort of a seesaw. You lie on it and then you put your head underwater? No.
No. That's called a water. That's a water treatment. A waterboard is actually a device which is relatively flat. The feet are slightly elevated so that the water goes into your sinuses and stays there for the most part. And what they do is they strap you down. They immobilize your head. Then they pour water at a controlled rate into your sinuses and then fills your sinuses, it fills your throat, and eventually works its way down into your lungs, and you go through a controlled drowning. If you hear the news media say simulated, I've been waterboarded, there is nothing simulation, there's no simulation going on, you are in a controlled drowning.
Under what conditions were you waterboarded?
I was an instructor at the Survival Evasion Resistance and Escape School in Coronado, California. The Navy SEER School in Coronado was the only SEER school authorized to use this technique and to use that particular device as a demonstrator of how an enemy had the ability to take you beyond your ability to resist. You could not resist the waterboard. You will talk. The point is, we don't want you to just say classified information. We want you to know how to work through torture and foil the enemy in the battlefield of the mind, as we call it. Mm-hmm.
So you were training people so that when they were caught, or when they were prisoners and they were being waterboarded, they would know what to do.
That's right. And we didn't waterboard everybody. It was maybe one student per class, two students per class, just as a demonstrator, mainly intransigent SEALs for the most part. But what we would do is show you, this is how an enemy will really do it. Now, all of these techniques came from America's enemies.
Is all of this torture?
Well, when we do it, it's not torture. And I've actually had to argue this against people who said, oh, well, you've tortured American citizens. No, what we do is give you a example of a few seconds of what an enemy could do, whether we're keeping you standing. We don't make you stand for 40.
No. But Malcolm, when we do this to our prisoners, whether it's at Guantanamo or anywhere else, are we torturing them?
Well, the enhanced interrogation techniques, as they called them, that were used post 9/11 are without any question torture. And that's because they are the techniques that we in the SEER community gleaned from over 236 years of prisoners, U.S. service members from. We actually had dossiers of information from the French and Indian Wars of prisoner captivity and their treatment and the tortures that they went through. We compiled all that information into a manual a manual of evil and manual of nasty effects. And we taught our students this is what totalitarian enemies with a complete disregard for human rights could do to you. This book was paid for in blood of U.S. service members who died in captivity. And we say that that your defense is that torture never works and that the United States will hold the moral high ground and it's your job to defeat the enemy when they use torture. When we chose it, we chose to technically dishonor ourselves and the memory of all of those service members who died to glean this information.
Has this helped ISIS and Al-Qaeda?
Oh, yeah, helped immensely. Osama bin Laden, as early as the early as the mid-1990s, had been saying that the United States is a hypocritical nation, it's a lying nation, it employs torture, that it would employ torture against Muslims, and that in the call to arms for members to come globally and join the international Al-Qaeda organization, they should understand that when you're captured by the Americans will torture you. We used to laugh at that because prior to 9/11, none of that was being carried out. I mean, we could make a person uncomfortable, but interrogation methods that are non-coercive are often the most effective. What you don't want an enemy to do is to have their worldview validated. When this program was developed, like I said, it was taken from the defensive SEER program and turned into an offensive torture program. That it validated every word that Osama bin Laden said. And we hear ISIS is actually using waterboarding right now on captives in Syria. And we understand that some of the beheaded captives were waterboarded and given other tortures.
Let's go to Ed in Columbia County. Okay, Ed, you're on. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good, Ed, go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm asking two questions that Chris Cuomo was actually asking this morning on CNN. Is the Taliban becoming jealous of ISIS, and is the Taliban now in competition with ISIS?
Malcolm?
It's a good question, but it's a question that makes me wonder because, like I said, I recently returned to the United States from seven years overseas in the Middle East, and it makes me wonder what's going on back here. We have been fighting the Taliban in active ground combat since 2001. We have been engaged in a overt and covert war against Al-Qaeda since as early as 1995. These organizations, ISIS is, by the way, Al-Qaeda. They're the development of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They changed their name to the Islamic State of Iraq in the Levant. They are not in competition. They are two organizations which work hand in hand. Al-Qaeda supported the Taliban. As a matter of fact, during the 1990s, all of Taliban's military training centers were run by Al-Qaeda, which is why when we attacked Al-Qaeda in 1998, with our cruise missile attack, we killed members of the Taliban and other groups. But they are not in competition. They have their own ideological makeup. The Taliban is not as cultish as the Al-Qaeda organization is. Al-Qaeda believes in a philosophy called the victorious denomination ideology, which was developed by Osama bin Laden. The Taliban are extremely hardcore. They're extremely orthodox. But I also want to make note that the group that may have done the terrorist attack in Pakistan today is most likely the Pakistani Taliban called Tehrik-e-Taliban and Al-Pakistan. And they are a completely different group from the Taliban of Afghanistan.
So the media is doing us a disservice when they say that these two groups are in competition.
Sure. I mean, ISIS is a branch of Al-Qaeda. The Taliban may cooperate with Al-Qaeda, they may organize with Al-Qaeda, they may fight with Al-Qaeda, but their goals are completely different. The Taliban seek to turn Afghanistan into their own nation back the way when they were fighting in the warlords period of the early 1990s. Al-Qaeda seeks to topple every government in the Middle East and convert it into their variation of Islam. And that's two completely different motivations.
Hey, Ed, thank you for the great call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break, thanks to Zachary, our superb engineer, and we'll be right back. So Jeremy and Doe and all of you who want to be with us, 1-800-348-2 2551.
Support comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, and Rhinebeck, with local, handcrafted, healthy, and sustainable gifts, home goods, and gourmet foods. Customized holiday gift baskets, too, on Facebook and sunflowernatural.com. Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, offering interior eco-friendly paint, including Benjamin Moore, Natura, and Aura. Providing advice and assistance for projects small and large, fleurylumber.com. And HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting The Jungle Book weekends now through December 21st at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org.
And we are back, thanks to Zach back. And Jeremy from Woodstock will be on, but I want to give that number one more time. We have two free phones. Get there now. They won't be there long. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Jeremy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hey.
I'm glad you're having a show. I feel like you're going to need to have a lot more of them. I want to just direct everybody who's listening to check out something called thetorturereport.org. Which done an extensive amount of research both on the report itself and whatever else they could piece together so that they're creating actual chronology, timelines, naming names, tracking down these detainees and what happened to them. I also want to, it's kind of amazing to me, just as your guest was talking about, that we have a former vice president crowing about war crimes as if the rest of the world can't see our media.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Malcolm, can you?
It just makes me slap myself in the head. You know, I like to point out some notes in my family history. My family has over now 110 years of military service combined. I've got my grandfather, father fought in World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all the way up to Afghanistan. And I feel completely dishonored that the lives and experiences of dead service members who were tortured would be taken, re-engineered, repurposed, and the vice president saying he would do it again. This is not what America is about.
Are you either bothered or amazed by the poll that says more Americans think torture is good than bad?
Well, you know, I'm very amazed because I think that if it was put into context, if you took testimony of World War II veterans who were tortured at the hands of the Nazis, or under interrogation from the Japanese, where they waterboarded people. I actually heard Karl Rove say this week, our waterboarding isn't torture because we don't elevate the legs of the prisoners the way the Japanese did. Well, that's not true. We do. And they did. And it was the exact same waterboarding. And the Japanese who did it were hung in the trials which followed in World War II. We hung people in the Nuremberg trials for carrying out these things. So perhaps we need to go back and revisit the history of torture against U.S. service members in the armed forces. But right now, Iran, if Iran wants to waterboard somebody, there is nothing the United States can do. We've lost our moral high ground because they will say, well, you said it wasn't torture, therefore we can do that to your captured pilots.
Of course. But, this is what happens.
Jeremy, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. You got five people behind you. I appreciate the call very much.
I just want to make one quick statement,
sure,
to clarify something that people, I know everybody was outraged when they saw Abu Ghraib and they thought of it as this aberration. And if you do your research, you'll find out that it wasn't an aberration because this wasn't just a CIA program. There were generals in military intelligence that were pushing this on military personnel as well. Those people who got punished for being in pictures.
Okay.
They were told to institute those policies.
Okay, good comment. And Malcolm?
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And, you know, I was a senior enlisted when I was in the military. I was a chief in the Navy. And I felt that in my military intelligence operations that I carried out in the field, I was the arbiter of what was right and what was wrong.
Oops.
And as the arbiter of what was right and what was wrong, it was my job to make sure that no idiot below me or ignorance above me allowed something like this to happen. If I was in Abu Ghraib, I would have blown the whistle, but I probably would have been the person arrested. It's absolutely amazing to me that they would dishonor themselves this way.
Okay, and we're going now to Doe in Wendell, Massachusetts. Okay, Doe, you're on.
Hi, I have a comment to make after I ask my question. My question is, are they the torturers and terrorists, are they doing it in the name of Islam, or is it just a military thing?
I think she's talking about terrorists. Let me address that.
With torturing and killing.
Right. Well, I need to clarify something. I've worked the Middle East my entire life. I've worked overtly, covertly, and clandestinely, sometimes even as a Muslim. This is not a component of Islam. What's happening here is you're seeing the manifestation of the fourth cult in Islam. There have been three other iterations of it, one in the 7th century, one in the 10th century, one in 1979, and now Al-Qaeda. Their variation of what they believe Islam is absolutely un-Islamic. There is nothing at all about what they want done and what they intend to do with Islam that they're doing. Many of the acts that they carry out are condemned by Muslims, but you don't hear about it in the media. There was a 200-page book condemning 9/11 from thousands of imams around the Muslim world. You just don't hear about it. So it has nothing to do with Islam. It has to do with this cultish aspiration.
And do you have a question?
My follow-up comment is that in the early revision of the church, where they were modest, were told that they've got immediate access into heaven. And I've also heard that in Islam, if they're martyred, they get right into paradise. So if they're killing in the name of Islam, all the martyrs and people that they're killing, they're getting sent right into their own heaven.
Well, you know, you could argue that Joan of Arc believed the same thing.
Yeah. I wondered if they believe in that and if they're doing it for that reason.
Well, what they believe is, like I said, they may think that they're maintaining what they think is an extremely orthodox version of Islam. Every Muslim imam, certainly in Saudi Arabia, who will call them deviants, that's the word they use, deviants, say that they're going straight to hell. They are not going to heaven. But in their belief, in their ideology, they believe they are.
That's so what's important. Hey, Doe, thanks for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it very
you.
Much. Right. Let's go to Bob in Albany. Bob in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Malcolm. I was struck by your setting the point where we dishonored ourselves as recently as you have. I'm just wondering if you can comment on whether you take into account all of the CIA and other training that was done of South American right-wing death squads and torturers, the work we did in Vietnam to train the South Vietnamese on how to torture the Hmong and the North Vietnamese. I think our history of torture and training in torture goes a lot further back than just the last few years.
It's an interesting comment. I know people think that the U.S. Army School of the Americas and a lot of the operations which were carried out in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Paraguay, Uruguay, were or may have touched where they trained people in what we call field expedient techniques, torture techniques. Those things were just that. They were field expedient. Vietnam, there's the famous photograph of the Viet Cong being waterboarded with a canteen. He's lying flat on the ground. You cannot stop people in an environment where you have hundreds of thousands of soldiers or even some operatives out in the field from doing things which are against the law. Vietnam, you know, that famous line from Apocalypse Now, handing out trying to arrest somebody for murder is like hanging out a speeding ticket at the Indy 500. People were thrown from helicopters. We know that. That's documented. This is the sort of thing that the SEER program also documented.
You keep saying SEER. Can you just define SEER?
Sure. Yeah. It's survival, evasion, resistance, and escape.
Okay.
And we understand abuse. Our staff is trained to recognize when someone was going overboard. And that's where, you know, the Uniform Code of Military Justice for service members, the U.S. Code Against Torture for CIA officers should have kicked in. And the fact that their management and field management didn't do that in Latin America just goes to show you that there needs to be more oversight.
I had a junior high school teacher. I had a junior high school teacher who used to tell me that with the Japanese, when some of the Hawaiian soldiers would catch them, they would take them behind the hill. You'd never see them again. So I don't think. I think your point is well taken, Bob. That
just one aside. I was a Vietnam era soldier, and I was tortured during basic training with what was called a Tucker telephone, which you might be familiar with. Yeah. And it was well established and known that the troops that weren't doing as well in training as the rest of their cadre got a lot more torture than those that were...
And what was it, Bob?
A Tucker telephone?
Yeah.
It was a crank telephone, field telephone, and you cranked it up and then you attached the touched the wires to a person's stomach, genitals, wherever. And it felt like a power drill winding your flesh up.
Okay, Malcolm?
Yeah, that actually is a torture, and that somebody would be doing that at basic training in uniform. It just goes to show you the level of stupidity that sometimes exists. You know, they say that the greatest danger in the world is a corporal without a sergeant watching him. And, you know, these are the sort of things which happen.
This was a sergeant major who oversaw a first sergeant doing it. So it wasn't just corporals. It was established SOP.
That was a
different okay, Bob, thanks, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to Bob in New York. Okay, Bob.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Not great. So keep your face next to the receiver.
All right, I apologize. I'm on my car phone. First of all, Jeremy, I just wanted to thank you for your service. I'm also currently serving, and I've been through SEER training. And, you know, I don't want to debate the efficacy of the tactics. I disagree with the Senate Intelligence Committee's report in that I think at times those types of techniques have produced actionable intelligence. But my comment is that I just wanted to remind the viewers, and Jeremy, I'm sure you're aware of this as well, is that prior to these revelations of the CIA black sites or the enhanced interrogation techniques, many of the captives that JSOC or USASOC or the CIA rolled up overseas were then turned over to allied countries such as Egypt and Morocco to basically do our dirty work for us. And I think ultimately, now that these actions have been brought to light, that's probably what's going to happen in the future.
Okay, Malcolm?
The Senate Intelligence Report is not a document which was someone just sat down and banged away on a typewriter. It was the study of internal CIA documents, studies and reports done by the CIA from their own officers. So the information that's inside it is as proprietary as it can be. If you've gone through SEER, then the first thing you need to remember is the first slide that we show you in resistance training. Torture does not work. And this is why at SEER we took these techniques and gave you a short demonstration and showed you how to make it work for you, how to foil the enemy on their own battlefield of the mind. So, thanks for being in the service with us and, you might want to go back and review your notes.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, although the phones are pretty much, they've got one free phone right now. And number two, you can get us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, voxpop. Here's one, Malcolm, very quickly.
Sure.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask, is there a connection or relationship between ISIS and the group called Boko Haram in Nigeria? Are they the same thing in different places?
Yes. In a nutshell, yes, you could say that. They are geographically different. They are ethnically different. However, again, these are groups that are referred to as Salafist or neo-Salafist, Salafism being the belief that you have to carry yourself in an extremely over-Orthodox methodology, the way that the immediate companions of the Prophet Muhammad behaved, and that you believe in this bin Laden victorious denomination ideology. The Shabab of Somalia, the Islamic Al-Qaeda, the Islamic Maghreb, the Derna Thawar of Libya, ISIS in Syria, Iraq, Al-Qaeda, Arabian Peninsula, they all believe the same ideology, and Boko Haram is a variation of that.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's go to Mike in Great Barrington. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, guys. How's it going today?
We're good.
Hey.
Thank you for your service, Chief. I would just like to say that also as a former devil dog. I just, as far as the torture goes, it doesn't really matter to me. Ethically, it's not really a sound idea. But, we're not fighting Vikings that are standing on their tanks in uniform. Mm-hmm. These guys are fighting with the Eastern philosophy that, you know, they hide in civilians, populaces. They're not wearing uniforms. They attack, in ways that we find dishonorable in general. But my real question is, to me, the torture doesn't really matter that much because, I mean, after all, we are killing them. If you torture someone, they're still alive. But, mm-hmm. In wars, we kill them, and that's I think, a little bit worse.
Right.
But my real question is, what do you guys think? I'm not sure about this, but I lean a little bit towards one direction on this. The idea that there's a general problem in the Middle East that you have 15 or 16 different nations in a sort of two different sides of a common nation. You have Arabia and you have Persia, where they speak the same language. They have a similar culture, but you have this spread out over 15, 16 different, totalitarian regimes or kings.
Okay, Mike, I'm sorry. There are just so many people behind you. Get to the question mark, okay?
Yes, sir, yes. I was just wondering what you guys thought about the possible unification of these areas into a modern government type, modern, first world type nation.
Yeah, rely on a devil dog to get right to it and actually ask a very good question. It's, in fact, what you see with the Al-Qaeda organization, Al-Qaeda being ISIS and all of the rest of them, from Nigeria to Morocco, as far west as India. That's what they want. They wish to establish, to knock down all the governments and establish a unified Al-Qaeda cult-based caliphate on their corrupt variation of Islam.
And what are the chances, Malcolm, that they'll get away with it?
If you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said down to 10%. Now I would say they're up to 60%.
Really?
Yeah.
When the President of the United States says we're making progress, is he fudging the gilding the lily?
Well, Mike gave us his comment about killing these terrorists. This is what we call kinetic warfare. We're very, very good at that. That's why we have Marines. That's why we have an Air Force. However, what we are engaged in right now, where we're making no progress, is what I call the counter-ideological war. Mm-hmm. We just cannot break the link between this group and Islam because we're not trying.
And how should we be doing it?
Well, I would say you'd have to read my book, An End to Al-Qaeda. But,
and the name of the book is?
An End to Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. You can still find it on Amazon for like a dollar. But it was go ahead.
I think, guys, that the problem lies with the religious, government being focused on religion or, kings. We need to depose all those guys. Well, I thought we were in support of ISIS.
Don't worry about it.
I thought those were our boys from North Africa.
Okay, Mike, we got to move along. Go ahead,
ISIS is Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Okay.
The same guys we fought in Fallujah.
Mike, thanks an awful lot for your
call. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Jeremy in New Paltz. Jeremy, you're on.
Hey, Dr. Shartok. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Go ahead.
I just have a question regarding the media that I'm hoping you guys can maybe discuss or maybe give some answers. My question is this. It seems like the nature of clandestine operations are such that there's tons of things which are never revealed to the American public at the time that they're happening, and they come out later, whether it's the Lusitania or the USS Maine or whether it's the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And these are all various ways to mobilize public support for people to sort of, go out into the streets and kill each other. And if you combine that with the fact that a lot of the media outlets are, sort of conglomerized and everything goes back to the international money lenders, how does the American people know when they're actually being told the truth?
Well, that's going to take critical analysis skills that I think are sadly lacking in the United States. You're just going to have to get multiple sources of media. I was an analyst on Fox News for over 2 years, and I can tell you right now that one narrow view of information is not going to help you. Listen to multiple sources, BBC, Al Jazeera, Radio France, and take that information, analyze it, and try to come out with a solid stream of intelligence.
Jeremy, that Mario Cuomo used to say to me that every time you saw an ad for Lou Lehrman, a light should go off in your head saying he's trying to buy the election. I only say that because every time we hear one of these things, a light should go off in everybody's head now and say, wait a second, can I believe this? When we saw people's heads getting cut off here. Well, they were certainly doing that. There seemed to be little doubt about that. But how much of it was being utilized by our people in order to do the counter thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. It seems like I read somewhere that during all this talk about ISIS, Saudi Arabia has actually beheaded 29 people, but you don't hear about it because they're our friends and they flood the market with cheap oil whenever we tell them.
Every Friday.
Yeah.
Every Friday in Saudi Arabia.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Let's go. Let's go to a break and we'll be right back.
Comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild, offering environmental outdoor education and living history programs for schools. Ashokancenter.org. And Capital Roots, formerly Capital District Community Gardens, announcing their new home at the Urban Grow Center. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org.
And there is one free phone, line number 3, 1, 2, 4, and 5. For your information, not that it means a lot to anybody, are all busy. And we're going to take them as fast as we can. We're going around the curve here. Let's go to Chris in Springfield. Chris, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Quick question. How much does poverty and desperation, like with the over 10 years of instability that you have in Iraq and such, how much does that actually play into recruitment as opposed to the religious ideologies? One other quick thing, like with Maliki, you know, we had him buy $100 million, I think, worth of airplanes instead of to patrol his own airspace or something. But I'm pretty sure that money could have been used to help the people in desperation. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, here we go. Malcolm?
Well, you're absolutely right. Poverty is a gateway into ideological indoctrination. And in Iraq was making a lot of money. I've worked in Iraq over the last 3 years, and they are making hundreds of billions in oil revenue. And that's the money that Prime Minister Maliki was not sharing equitably, which created the crisis between them, the Sunna, and the Kurds in Iraq, and which led to the Sunna just saying, forget it, we're just going to go back to ISIS. Now, ISIS, on the other hand, has a completely different plan for the Sunna. There will be no getting out of it this time. So ideology will trump everything.
Chris, okay. Thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to Willie in Schenectady. Willie, you're on.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for your service, Malcolm. And I bought your book and your handbook, so I'm getting familiar with you. The first statement I make is about different titles to torture. I know that torture is being practiced in colleges, fraternities, and the Greek system is billed as hazing. I know that torture is being practiced in the urban gangs and is billed as initiations, of which here in Schenectady, we had some of the victims of those initiations commit suicide in their high schools. Mm-hmm. I think that torture is a primal instinct in man that can only be countered with initiatives like training, but we need to do it earlier. It needs to be done in the colleges for the fraternities, it needs to be done in the high schools for the gangs. Mm-hmm. Now, my observation, I noticed that Fox News is sponsoring a counter-narrative against the Senate's report by focusing on the casualties caused by drones. I wonder what your comment is on that.
I find myself really in dismay sometimes watching the media back here in the United States. Everything that I see that comes out when you dress up something like torture overseas you're just enhancing the recruitment capabilities of people who say, look, here's the lying, hypocritical Americans again. They want to, you know, they don't even believe that what they're doing is wrong. That plays in the third world, and it does lead to the death of U.S. service members and citizens overseas.
Willie, I thank you so much. A lot of people behind you were trying to get everybody in. Thanks very much for calling. Let's go to Jay in Albany. Jay in Albany, you're on.
Hi. So there's Al-Qaeda in Libya, there's Al-Qaeda in Nigeria, there's Al-Qaeda in Somalia, there's Al-Qaeda in Yemen. But the only, you know, Al-Qaeda that seems to draw all these foreigners, including Americans and Canadians, is ISIS. And I wonder why that is.
That's a very good question. Unfortunately, Al-Qaeda groups throughout the world are not only manned by Westerners, just in Iraq and Syria. Al-Shabaab in Somalia was a major organization that took Western Americans and British and French. Same thing with Al-Qaeda of the Islamic Maghreb. It is a transnational organization with an international recruiting base. Syria was just easy to get to for Westerners because all you had to do was fly to Istanbul, say you were going on you were going to go sightseeing or going to the beaches of Turkey, and then you go to southern Syria and you cross right over. So for Europeans and Westerners, it was just easier to get to. Why are they recruiting Westerners? Because they have found that using Western personnel and drawing them in who are isolated, who feel alone, who want to do something greater than themselves. I'm quite surprised by the number of converts that I've met, people who are mentally unstable or people who sincerely converted to what they believe is Islam. But the members who have actually left Al-Qaeda, who've left these Islamic groups, were the people who found out that Islam is absolutely nothing like what they were told that they had to believe in there. There's the famous case of Mr. Mortensen. He was a Danish terrorist who worked for the CIA for a while. And he left. He left because he found that Islam was tolerant. Islam, he didn't have to get rid of 1,200 of the 1,400 years of Islamic thought that he was told had to be gotten rid of. And that's what made that change. So until we can change their social media inroads and break this ideology, it's going to be very hard.
Jay, thank you. Okay, let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yes, the only thing that can defeat Al-Qaeda and the only thing that they're afraid of from the West is American soap operas. Because their women, all you hear about is the men, but the women are in their houses looking at other Western women driving cars, voting, fashion, and all the education that they're not getting. So.
Okay, David, that sounds like an interesting comment. Let's get Malcolm's response. Malcolm? You lived in the Middle East.
It's an interesting comment. You know, I used to joke that the only thing that would stop Islamic extremism in the United Arab Emirates was the Gucci stores closing or the Bentley shops all closing up, and then you'd have an Arab revolution there. In fact, the only thing that is going to stop this group is to de-link its ideology from Islam and have the Islamic world itself realize that they have a virus within them. And they're going to have to turn on them.
And the chance of that happening, Malcolm?
It's starting to change because Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Qatar, and Qatar was a big supporter of Islamic extremism. They are actually now creating a coalition and they're taking part in the airstrikes against ISIS. They see ISIS as a mortal existential threat that is one country away. It's from Jordan and Saudi Arabia's border, so they cannot afford this virus to spread.
Now, did I catch you in an inconsistency in that you told us that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are one and the same?
Oh, yeah.
And yet some of these countries that you've just cataloged for us have been giving money to one but not the other.
Well, there's indications that individuals within Qatar and the Saudi Arabia support this.
Can you address my question?
This ideology.
And go again. What's the question again?
About soap operas.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's women. We defeated communism with Radio Free Europe, And look at what we're doing with the internet with the Arab Spring. I mean, it's just a matter of giving the right information to the right people.
Okay, David, let's go, Malcolm.
Yeah, and that's what I say about counter-ideology. Counter-ideology is helping the Muslim world spread the word that this cultic ideology there is anti-Islamic.
So are we doing enough, or we're not doing enough?
We're not doing anything.
And the Islamic forces that are opposed to ISIS and al-Qaeda are not doing enough?
They're not taking it as seriously as they absolutely should, but the Saudis have made some headway.
David, thank you.
Okay.
Let's go to Kate in Pittsfield. Kate, you're on.
Hi, thank you. Is it true that torture centers throughout the world masquerade as hospitals, and doctors are coerced into advisory roles to make torture procedures more painful?
Well, I can't speak to that directly because we don't know. The facilities that we do have some information about weren't hospitals. They were secure sites, done more like military barracks, the ones that we had in Poland and Romania. But there have been examples of where doctors were not coerced, but actually took part actively and happily in torture programs. And, well, Dr. Mengele in World War II amongst the Nazis, or the Argentinians had an entire medical teams organized around creating the most horrific tortures that they could
do. But what about us?
As I understand it from the Senate Intelligence Report, they were medically supervised. The actual activities like the rectal feeding, which is absolutely laughable on its face. That has nothing to do with nutrition. I mean, unless you're using Ensure, you know, it's not going, coming out of the rectum or going into the rectum doesn't help. It just tortures the person. These were not medically initiated procedures. They were medically supervised procedures. And the doctor's job was to make sure that the person did not die. In several instances, that failed also, and it will probably take more investigation.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jim in Albany. Jim in Albany, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
It's a great program today. I hope you have more in the future, and I'd like to suggest that Malcolm be invited with three presidents, Eisenhower, Lincoln, and Washington, because they represent the best in American history.
Well, I vote for that. I want to meet Washington. But my family, as an African-American, would say, no, you really need to meet Lincoln. You know, General George Washington set the pace on U.S. Military policy toward
prisoners. That's what I was going to ask you.
It is actually a standing order, the General Order Number 1 for the Military Northern Expedition on the Ethical Treatment of Prisoners of War. Washington said the United States military will not engage in any abuse or killing of prisoners, which was the standard at the time that he won the Battle of Trenton and Battle of Princeton. British soldiers would just kill the service members on the battlefield or put them on troop transports in horrific conditions and starve them to death. Washington said that we will not treat the Hessians that way, and that created the entirety of the German migration in the American Revolution.
So you mean that where they came here?
Where they stayed here after they fought the war.
Sure.
And George Washington set that pattern, and Dick Cheney and George Bush decided to violate it.
Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Malcolm. Great comments.
Thanks, Jim.
Let's go to Andre in Williamstown. Andre, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm thinking back to the initial question that Alan asked you at the top of the show about your reaction to Dick Cheney and his remarks. And going from there, about 2 months ago on this very show, there was another distinguished gentleman, an intelligence officer, I believe, who made the comment about how woefully misinformed the American citizenry are because of the media coverage or the lack thereof.
By the way, Andre, I think that was the same guest.
That was me.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. At least you said distinguished. That was good.
My opinion stands.
You're in good company then. Thank you. My observations are the same about the media. I think I said that at the last call that I was speaking. But also in reference to Alan quoting a poll that was released about, I hadn't heard or read that, 59% of the American public support some sort of enhanced techniques of torture. Isn't that something that we as citizens really need to be concerned about, because there is an obvious divide in this country, an ideological divide. I have some very good friends who, upon hearing Vice President Cheney's remarks, applauded and said, yes, yes. And these are people that are citizens within the communities, professionals, college-educated, family people. So where do you think we should where do we go with this?
Let me speak to that point. It's quite simple. If the American public knew, or were to suppose, or were to be briefed on the tortures that American service members underwent under the North Vietnamese, that were equal to, just equal to what that the CIA did and was authorized by George Bush, and they were to show the drawings or some of the images of the U.S. service members being tortured, they would change their mind pretty quick. Right now, as I said a little earlier, North Korea, Iran, pick your totalitarian state, can now feel validated that they can use these exact techniques, keeping a person standing up for 72, 90, 180 hours, waterboarding them, stress positions, all of these things. And they can now come to The Hague, or they can now come to the world and say, we didn't torture anybody. What we did was we used enhanced interrogation techniques. ISIS, at some point, I am certain, ISIS, before their next head beheading video, will probably release one of their amusing waterboarding videos. And then I would like the American public to take a poll. These techniques that we brought into the SEER program that were taken and reverse engineered were paid for in the blood of thousands of dead service members. Mm. It is disgrace that they were that these things were so dishonored by having them used in their name to say, this is how we go after our enemies. We can kill our enemies kinetically, but once they're off the battlefield, they need to be treated according to Washington's standing order.
Well, Andre, I gotta go because we only have a few seconds left.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Catherine in Williamstown. Catherine?
Thank you for your program.
Sure.
This is excellent, excellent topic. One question here. How could we, the people, hold those responsible accountable for their actions, criminal court of justice like ICJ, but if we don't have the sense or the spine to do that, could those responsible at whatever capacity be called to task?
It's a good question. Personally, I mean, there is an entire system in place under the U.S. Criminal Code. That's entirely up to the Department of Justice, the Vice President and the President, George Bush and Dick Cheney. They fall under a completely different system. They could be held accountable. Congress is not going to hold them accountable. I don't think that anything's going to be done. However, airing this is a very good idea. I think it's very healthy for this nation. It's healthy for us service members who are going to have to go, and intelligence members who are going to have to go out there in the future to understand that we can at least talk about it. We can understand that this can't be done again in our name. But so long as you know, you as an individual can just stand your ground. When I was called before Congress in 2007 as an intelligence professional to testify on the inefficiency of waterboarding, you know, I had a lot of people tell me, don't go, don't go. But
we know that these effects don't do anything.
Absolutely.
And yet,
nothing.
Those involved, why does it continue? And those physicians who are there to make sure they don't die, why aren't their tickets pulled?
Well, the question is, who are they? And I'm sure that that's the next round of questions that's going to be consuming the news media over the next few years. We're not going to hear about this. This is not going to end until Dick Cheney admits it, which means that we're never going to hear the end of this torture debate.
Catherine, I'm sorry we can't speak to you longer, but thank you for the very good call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chef.
Okay, we're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those who left on the line, which are nobody. I also want to thank Malcolm Nance for joining us today. Malcolm, you're terrific. Thanks for doing this again. We're very honored to have you. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Barry Price Architecture. Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializes in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. College Street Motors, College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com and Stewart's, Stewart Shops. We're closer to you in business since 1921. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. And I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.